Chris Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA1977 on Twitter.
Nimmers Netter, just talking to teachers.
Hello and welcome to episode 6. Yes, you heard it right, episode 6 of Nailers Natter. This week we talked to TDT's program manager, Bethan Hindley. Beth has enjoyed a rich and varied career so far. She's a Teach First ambassador and worked in London, and she's also taught abroad in Brazil. In this episode, she shares her experience of working with research and evidence and the innovative ways in which she accesses it. She's a prolific listener to podcasts, and she talks about her conversion to research and evidence whilst listening to Craig Barton. She enjoyed it so much that she did an extra lap on her way home as a consequence. We discuss cognitive load, direct instruction, and an episode of Craig's podcast with Greg Ashman. I feel as if I say this every week and apologise for the audio, but as a novice to podcasting, I have tried everything on the settings to get the volume right. And this week, I'm afraid, we are much too high in the mix, if that's the right expression. So advance warning to keep the volume down a little bit and apologise for any distortion that you might experience. Hopefully the message will still come through. So without further ado, here's my interview with Teacher Development Trust's Bethan Hindley.
Okay, welcome to episode 6 of Nailers Natter. And this week we welcome Bethan Hindley. Welcome, Bethan.
Hi.
Bethan is the school program leader, one of the school program leaders for the Teacher Development Trust, and she's going to be answering some of our usual questions and adding her experience to the podcast. So the first one, Bethan, and I've been calling this the X Factor question, so if you can tell us about your journey to this point and your current role, please.
Okay, well, I'm not sure it's got quite a sub story X Factor to it, but I started off training with Teach First, and I taught maths and economics in London. I then moved to Brazil, and I was working there as a second in the maths department. So I have had the pleasure of working both in the UK and abroad.
Fantastic. Now, I'm not going to let that opportunity to go past. So as you're probably aware, there's been a lot of research and evidence done in different countries. I know that, for example, Lucy Crean's book, Cleverlands, looked at different education systems in different countries. Did you pick up anything in particular from your work in Brazil, anything that you could kind of share with listeners?
Absolutely. So the school that I worked in, it was a British school, so we taught the British curriculum. However, we did have, especially in the maths department, we had the great fortune of having some teachers who had qualified in Brazil, as well as having teachers who'd qualified in the UK, and the difference in the training routes was just really, really noticeable. So that the Brazilian teachers were absolute experts with their subject knowledge and had phenomenal amount of expertise in that area. Some of the most intelligent people I've come across, so was able to learn a huge amount from them. But there was, for their training route, there was less focus on classroom management, which often meant that was where the support was needed for them, which we could obviously provide as having had quite a lot of classroom management training in the UK. So it was really fascinating in that way.
And that's really, really interesting. I mean, I've been doing a lot of work recently around looking at Daniel Mears' evidence summary behind the new Ofsted inspection framework. And there's some talk about, you know, the importance of sort of subject knowledge, content knowledge, general pedagogy, you know, pedagogical content knowledge and things like that. That's really interesting that you said that the teachers in Brazil were kind of experts in subject first and then maybe sort of pedagogy second and then behaviour later on. It's quite an interesting kind of discussion to have that about the relative importance of those different areas.
Absolutely, and in the way that you just explained it, I feel like the training that I experienced, it kind of worked in the opposite way, so that my initial focus was absolutely behaviour management, classroom management skills, and then it later was able to turn to subject expertise.
No, it's really interesting, really interesting. Okay, moving on to the questions. So, as you know, the big focus of this podcast is to discuss with listeners the one piece of research that has most influenced you. So, what is that one piece of research?
Okay, so I have, this might be a slight cheat, I didn't necessarily read it, it was read to me in the means of a podcast, and that was by listening to the Mr. Barton Maths podcast. Now, that has amazing research in many of the episodes, but there was one particular episode that stood out for me, and I can remember exactly where I was when I was listening, because I used to listen as I was walking to and from school, and I was so engrossed in this one episode where Greg Ashman was being interviewed that I decided to do an extra few laps on the way home so that I could finish listening to it. And my partner even texted me because he was worried that I'd got lost on the way home. But it was such a phenomenal episode, and there was so much research covered. I don't want to go into all of it because I feel that might steal some topics from some other future interviewees. But there was the introduction to cognitive load theory, talking about the benefit of explicit instruction. And there was one point when I just had a flash of all the previous lessons I'd done based on constructivism, and thinking that that light bulb moment came for pupils when they had that discovery for themselves from an open-ended task without much instruction, and I suddenly had a horrible feeling that I had enabled many misconceptions to be adopted through that method. But it's a fantastic episode that I would thoroughly recommend to anybody, and especially as an introduction to using educational research, because it was, for me, it was a really eye-opening experience, I would say, to see what is out there in different ways to engage with research.
Well, so much to unpick there. I mean, that's fantastic. First of all, I don't know Craig Barton well by any stretch of the imagination, but he did come to Research Ed last year, and I did get to chat to him a little bit, and we do kind of converse a little bit on Twitter. But I often tweet and include him in that, because, like you, I tend to listen to his podcasts when I'm out running, or should I say sort of, you know, plodding very, very slowly. So, you know, he's been the consequence of listening to him has been that I've got a little bit fitter mentally as well as physically, hopefully. But it's a fantastic, fantastic podcast, and, you know, he's a really, really good presenter. So in terms of that one piece of research, are we going on cognitive load, or are we going on principles of instruction?
I would say maybe explicit instruction. Yeah. That was, for me, that stuck out a bit more in that episode, because I could picture immediately where I'd been going wrong up until that point.
Yeah, and I think that's the point. I mean, I'm not to put words in his mouth, I think that's kind of the point of his podcast, and obviously the title of his book would suggest that happened to him, you know, that kind of moment of realising that you've potentially been doing it, sort of in inverted commas, wrong for all this time. And I've certainly felt that when I've listened to things, you know, like his podcast and his interview with David Dido, which was also excellent along those kind of lines.
I think you could hear it in this episode as well, so that my walk was maybe 25 minutes to work, and I'd listened to some of it in the morning, and then on the way home, as the conversation developed, you could hear that there was just that sort of moment of realisation. It's a really great listen for that as well.
Brilliant, brilliant. So that's kind of talking about when and where you read it, so you quite specifically remember that. But why did you listen to that in particular? Is it something that you do regularly as part of your job, listen to those podcasts, or was this, you know, a particular subject that you were interested in?
Well, so for me, location-wise, being this was whilst I was living in Brazil, there was a lack of subject-specific CPD, really, that was available. So I had always been very interested in keeping up to date. I trained through Teach First, and when I was in the UK, there was lots of conference opportunities, and there was always somewhere where you could go to gain some CPDs. Whereas in Brazil, I felt that was missing slightly, so that I was looking for different ways to keep involved and to hear what was going on. So this was a really easy way for me, I guess, to expose myself to that knowledge, and also having the ability of hearing two people discuss it at great length without having to read the research papers and unpick it individually was, whilst managing a full teaching timetable, very, very helpful.
Absolutely, and that's one of the reasons that we do this podcast, is that, you know, by no stretch of the imagination am I, as presenter, trying to claim to be any kind of expert, but it's discussing, as the jingle goes, you know, talking to teachers. That's exactly the kind of idea. We're quite, you know, we struggle with the amount of tasks we've got to do as it is without going home and wading through endless research papers. But the opportunity to listen to people talk about how they use these things in the classroom is really valuable. And I always listen to Craig Barton's podcast, even though I'm not a maths teacher. You know, I'm a lowly scientist, but those kind of things I absolutely do. So I can fully agree with that. So in terms of your own classroom, how did you then go back to your classroom and then try and use some of that?
I can give a specific example. The feeling that I had where it had gone so wrong was thinking about the ways that I used to introduce finding angles and parallel lines. And I had this lesson where I had a worksheet with lots of parallel lines and the angles were formed. And initially the idea was that the pupils would be able to discover the relationship and the angles that were formed by measuring the angles themselves. And I found the resource and I thought, this is great. They're going to have that light bulb moment. They're going to measure the angles and see that some of them are the same, and they'll be able to spot that that's the rule, and it'll be fantastic, and that, you know, that will change their lives. It's going to be so exciting. So delivered the lesson, and lo and behold, within about 30 seconds in a class of 30, you realise that maybe 20 of the pupils can't use a protractor confidently. So then I'm running around trying to help them with those skills. You've got another group who have whizzed ahead and have found that some of the angles are the same, but then reflecting on it weren't clear which ones exactly were relating to one another, because you end up with lots of angles that measure exactly the same, so that they couldn't spot that relationship. So that reflecting on how I would have changed that as a result of hearing about the benefits of explicit instruction would be, firstly, not introduce a lesson where you might have the risk of the discovery being based on something completely unrelated to the concept at hand, so that the ability to measure an angle with a protractor has got nothing related to the fact that the angles formed by the transversal and the parallel lines might have a relationship, because that takes up the cognitive load of the pupils. So that now, if I were to introduce this topic, there's a very nifty animation on GeoGebra where you have two parallel lines that are on top of each other with the transversal going through it, and then you can separate them so that you can see that there are those two angles, whichever ones you want to focus, that will then remain constant. And through using that demonstration and explaining the process, you are then able to start demonstrating where angles are similar, and you can then use questioning to find out relationships with other ones, and that would then lead to giving some examples for pupils and letting them then try themselves, rather than opening a door for lots of misconceptions to be developed and problems with protractors, missing equipment and all the rest.
I mean, just to pick up on a little bit of that, and obviously, you know, mathematicians will be able to pick up on some of the more detailed aspects, but the idea that using the equipment is important is something that certainly within science we've tried to build in. So you mentioned about the fact that that increases the cognitive load because they don't have them or they find it difficult to use them. You know, that's something that we've certainly looked at in terms of science and sort of developing that automaticity around use of equipment, so that that isn't something that's sort of dominating and using the working memory, because it's there in the long term, and they know the equipment used, so they can use what's left of the working memory to focus on the task. So that's really interesting from a maths point of view as well.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's vital for any form of equipment, I would say, to ensure that the skills are there and they're not going to detract from the work at hand of what the actual focus and the learning objective is for that lesson.
No, it's very interesting. It's something that's so intuitive, but yet we don't feel that we should spend the time doing that because we've got so much content to get through. But actually, it's counterproductive that we don't spend the time doing that. We end up having to teach that anyway, so it takes away from the curriculum time in the end. Very good. Very interesting. Right. So in terms of, you've talked about what the influence was on you, but what was the impact of that change on your students and on the, sort of the wider practice?
So the thing that I really noticed was the quality of the conversations that I was having with pupils when I was checking their understanding or we were discussing one-on-one maybe. Whereas I found when there was less guided practice and they were able to talk generally about the work and show or demonstrate some understanding, when you've gone through the process of exposition using explicit instruction as well as some really clear worked examples and a quick check for understanding before pupils then continue with the work themselves, I really found that the pupils were able to articulate a lot more as to where they were in that process, where they were maybe a bit more stuck, where they needed more help, and even more so with the ability to highlight misconceptions that either they themselves had spotted or in a partner's work. So for me that was incredibly striking was the ability of the pupils to articulate their own learning as well.
Definitely. No, definitely. I think a lot of people who are listening to that will definitely be able to agree with that and try and use that in their classrooms. Now, obviously, we mentioned at the outset that your new position with the Teacher Development Trust is school programs leader. So a lot of your work is working with us as the expert advisors of the Teacher Development Trust, but also with CPD leads and teachers. So have you gone about sharing this in any of the networks that you work in?
As of yet, not right now, but I'm very excited to be doing that in the future.
Brilliant. Now, we usually do at this point, we do the shameless plug for Research Ed, which is coming ever closer now. final negotiations today around the ice cream van. This is the kind of level of detail we're going to give it the full Blackpool flavour.
Very important detail.
Well, absolutely. I like to think so. Yeah, and certainly if the weather continues like it was today, I mean, goodness me, we'll need an ice cream van. It's the first time I've got a sweat on during a CPD session in February, but there we go. So obviously you're not necessarily going to be speaking directly at Research Ed Blackpool, but TDT as an organisation are very well represented. So we've got John Collier, who's the expert advisor for Stoke, who's coming up to do a session for us, and obviously we've also got David Weston is coming up to do a session for us. So David's sessions are always extremely popular, extremely well attended, and people are really keen to hear him speak, but obviously you have the insight working with him on a daily basis. What do you know what exactly he's going to be talking about in his presentation, and who he's kind of targeting that at?
I haven't spoken to him directly about it, but I can guarantee that it will be a spectacular presentation and that there's going to be lots of food for thought in terms of the quality of CPD that leaders are delivering, the support that they're providing for their staff, and the culture that they're developing to enable it to be as effective as possible.
And in terms of a Blackpool feel for that, you know, the work that is being done in Blackpool by the CPD leads, by the Teacher Development Trust, and by the Hub in general is really making massive differences, and that's not just my subjective opinion of whether that's the case. That's been recognised by external organisations, by, you know, other factors, is massively, and the culture change around professional learning is really striking. So I think it's fantastic that David is giving up his time to come up and speak with teachers again in Blackpool, which he's done quite a few times over the duration of the Hub and before. So I know that will be a popular one. That's going to be in the it's going to be in the sports hall. So he's going to have the big venue and the double big screens. I don't know if you saw that. this is what I spend my days doing, Bethan. It's ice cream vans and big screens, but we have to make sure that 500 people can see. So that's brilliant. In terms of Teacher Development Trust, where can people find out a little bit more about the work that you're doing?
So there is the option of visiting our website, tdtrust.org, or we are on Twitter, at TeacherDevTrust, or you can Google Teacher Development Trust, and I'm sure we'll hopefully be the number one hit.
Well, definitely. 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 Well, thank you so much for giving up your time this balmy summer's evening in February.
Thank you.
To speak to us. Very much appreciated. What we'll do is we'll put some links to Craig Barton's podcast, some of the things that you've talked about, and some of the papers that obviously he and Greg Ashman were talking about on that particular episode. We'll put links to Teacher Development Trust, and we'll put links to David's bio in terms of what he's been speaking about at Research Ed. So once again, Bethan, thank you for your time, and I look forward to seeing you very shortly.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Nimmers Netter, just talking to teachers.
Talking to teachers about academic research and evidence-based practice with continuing professional development at PNA 1977 on Twitter.
Nimmers Netter, just talking to teachers.
A great interview with Bethan, I'm sure you'll agree, despite any difficulties with the audio. And Bethan actually recently visited the Teacher Development Trust Hub in Blackpool, which gives me an opportunity for a shameless segue into Research at Blackpool, which, can you believe, is now only 2 weeks to go. So the sessions have been published this week, and they've come out through the Blackpool Research School Twitter feed, so have a look at those, start to make your decisions as early as you can. Again, I'm proud to say that we have so many local teachers presenting with us, many of whom we've already interviewed here, and some of whom will be interviewed in the direct run-up to ResearchEd. Next week, we'll be talking to Liam Webb, and he'll be talking about the research and evidence behind extracurricular activities in PE, and an article that he's recently put forward for Teacher Toolkit. So I look forward to speaking to you all again next week. Thank you.